day fund, so we asked for that, and that has been put in there, and I won't go through that any more than that. Also, on page nine, if you look through section three around line 25 to 28, or starting with 28, let's just do that. Reimbursement requests for recurring and non-recurring charges necessary to enable the 911 jurisdiction to comply shall be submitted directly to the Emergency Management Division. When you take that together with the fact that we have a new separate account for E911, you will not have the unrestricted use of funds that we did with the original 3%. So what we're saying is there's more accountability for this new money, and they can only draw it when it's approved by the state. So you have a different situation. So the telephone industry has agreed to the increase from 3% to 5%, continue to let the cities and counties use the money that they are using today in the manner that they're using it today, and set up this new account to pay for this enhancement, but with some accountability and with some control by the state. So with those caveats, we were willing to sign off on the increase. If you look on page 10, line 5, you see a sentence that says, funding under this section shall be in the manner prescribed by the division and subject to the availability of funds. In other words, we're getting some restrictive language in there that gives some control back to the state, which we didn't have in the original 3%. So what I'm trying to explain, and I think if you look a little further down that page, line 28, section 8, it's the same kind of language. It allows the division to determine if the costs are appropriate. So what we've said is, okay, you can keep the 3%.
Who is the division?
The division would be emergency management. So what we've said in the industry is, you can keep the 3% and spend it the way you've always spent it, without a lot of restrictions and oversight. That will be total control by local government. But the new money, the 2%, will be dedicated to enhancing the system. There will be accountability and there will be some controls. And with those additions to the bill, we've agreed to go to the 5%.
And we put controls retroactively into the existing plan?
No, the I think, Mr. Chair.
You could, but you'd probably get lobbied real hard. Yeah.
Senator Yee, I think the problem with that is that you've had 10 years' experience of letting them have control over those funds, and it would be difficult to ask them now to start funding those things again from property taxes and then try and free that money up for the enhanced system. That may have been a choice that could have been made originally. It wasn't. I think it was a good decision. I was a drafter of the original legislation, and one of my goals was to give local control so that we didn't build a big bureaucracy at the state checking how many lines the fire department had. We've avoided that, and I think that's been good for Oregon. It's been cost-effective to have a small staff at the state level and let the local people have control over the system. I think that's worked, but what we want is a little more accountability on the new funds. And we feel we have that, and so we're agreeing to the increase in the tax.
Okay, Peggy.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to follow up on those comments that this bill is about 24 sections long, and one of them adds the two accounts, and the other ones almost all deal with the accountability for the money. Section 4, for instance, authorizes the Emergency Management Division to include the provisions of funding and when they adopt rules related to 911 systems.
What line are you on?
Well, actually, I'm in my review of it. So it's on page 3, section 4.
Line 44?
Well, it starts on line 40, and I'm summarizing what that whole section 4 does. Mm-hmm. It adds to the Emergency Management Division the responsibility to report to the Legislative Assembly biennially on the information that they gather, which is to include funding information. And then in multiple areas throughout the bill, it requires detailed information in the form of preliminary reports, and particularly in the form of final reports from each of the jurisdictions that include expenditure reports on capital and ongoing costs. And all of those plans have to be pre-approved by emergency management. It also gives emergency management division the authority if a jurisdiction doesn't present an acceptable plan to develop the plan for them, but requires extensive financial reporting on both the parts of the jurisdictions to emergency management and emergency management to the legislature. In quite a bit of detail.
Before we go on, just a second, how many other people out here want to testify on this bill? No one else? Okay, Paul Snyder.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mui.
Okay, Representative Shiprock had a question. Then I'll get back to
Maureen, what would happen for conversation's sake here? Who wrote Clackamas County out of this bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Shiprock, as we talked about before, there's a formula that's based on population. So the first thing that happened is the money not going to Clackamas would go into the general fund and be distributed on a population basis. And you also have the 35% kicker, and I'd rather not follow that through in just a conversational way, but you understand what I'm saying is you leave more money in the pool. And the other thing is to mention, I thought this was important, your staff person just going through that, but the one of the big differences between this fund and the 3% fund is the 3% fund is just distributed every quarter. It's gone. The state no longer holds any of that money, and it's spent. The new money will not be used unless it's approved by the division. So they have to have expenses that are reasonable. Now, this is the way the telephone industry has operated for the whole 10 years. We've only been reimbursed expenses that we've applied for. That's the way it's going to work for cities and counties under the new money, the new percentage for enhanced 911. And so if Clackamas doesn't draw down on that part of the fund, it just means there's more funds available. But again, they are only going to be distributed to those that are approved by the division. So it's possible that the additional money will not all be spent, and at some point in time we will take a look at that and maybe reduce that 5%. So again, the concern Senator Yee had, we had those same kinds of concerns. We don't think that you can look at the original 3% now and start saying, well, they should use this for that. We passed that. We kind of signed off on that. But we have asked for that kind of accountability. So the money will stay in the pot is the long answer to your question. What you don't draw down, it's in the pot.
And will be distributed to other jurisdictions.
On the first 3% would be distributed to local cities and counties. Mm-hmm. The other 2% would stay in the pot if it wasn't used, if it wasn't drawn down.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you see, it's always important for the chairman to know what his members are thinking.
Absolutely.
I've been there. And I'm just having a very hard time for me to vote to tax the people in my county. We represent districts, although we're supposed to have this statewide perspective, but it's tough for me to pass along a 2% increase in their telephone taxes. I have yet to see, since they're already doing this,
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
I'd like to go down to the Legislative Council and find a way of dealing with my problem.
Representative Shiprock's district will benefit by two provisions. First of all, I don't believe you're 100% yet, so you'll be able to draw down on the new funds. Okay, and secondly, the reimbursement for past systems means that you will get some advantage out of it for your district in reimbursing for some of those costs that you did in your forward-thinking way by moving ahead of time with some of those things, which, again, you can't argue with whether or not you should have done that. It was total local control, and I think that's worked
worked well.
Is it contemplated that the maintenance of the systems necessary for E911 would be paid for out of the new tax monies that would be collected? So that in the instance of the city of Portland or Clackamas, Multnomah County areas that this new tax might pick up a portion of the ongoing maintenance costs of the...
Mr. Chairman, the ongoing cost of the system as described under those four categories would continue to be funded, but it would be, I think, treated a little differently from the maintenance cost, you might say, of the 3% fund, which means that they can use it for personnel, they can use it for desks, they can use it for...
I'm not talking about the 3%, though. I'm talking about the 2% increase for enhanced 911. I mean, systems that already have it in place. If they had systems failure or ongoing maintenance, they may then be able to utilize some of these funds for those.
That's
so there is a benefit if the intent for my city and county to continue E911, they would be able to pick up some of those future, because you're going to have to buy more equipment, newer equipment, as it technology increases or as equipment fails, I would assume. So.
Mr. Chair, if I might, very briefly, that was one area that we didn't probably cover as well as we should have, and that deals with the reimbursement provision in the bill that was designed specifically to provide a retroactive payment for those jurisdictions who have already put in enhanced 911 telephone service. The three areas which would derive benefit from that provision are City of Portland, Clackamas County, and the City of Grants Pass, and any others that are in place providing enhanced service by the end of December this year. The proposal is that they would submit a final plan, right along with everyone else in the state, within the prescribed time frame. The retroactive payment would be based on the today costing of that plan. But the intent was to bring everybody up to speed, playing on the same set of rules as it relates to enhanced 911 on a statewide basis, and give those jurisdictions the benefits of the continued upgrading of the system as it develops.
Okay. Let's have Paul Snyder come up.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Oh, you do?
Oh,
okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot.
I just sit right in front of
you. Throw spitballs at me.
I want to know why is the federal 3% tax being extended? What is the reason? Because I thought that was supposed to be phased out after World War II was over.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, you're exactly right, and I'm sure you understand how that works. Once you have a tax, you don't want to let it go, and Congress is better than anybody else at keeping money. That tax has gone from 10% to 1% as far as highs and lows. Just a few years ago, it was down to 1%, and we thought we were going to finally get it off of there. And in the last few years, with all the pressures on government, it's gone back to 3%, and last session, Congress made it permanent, so it's never going away, and it won't change now. It's probably going to stay at 3%.
Yeah, but my question is, what do we use it for? What do we use it for?
Just general fund.
Just general fund?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I might say that brings up a real interesting point. You might also understand why we support the increase. At least we feel that increasing the tax or having a tax on the telephone in this case is going for something that benefits our subscribers directly, and that's the emergency 911 phone system. So as opposed to some other taxes that are floating around, and not only here but at the federal level, we're a frequent target for taxes, and the current utility bills in Oregon, we have a city tax, we have a 911 tax, we have the federal tax, we have the 25 cents for the deaf and the low income. This is a tax, at least, that goes towards something that we are involved in providing the services for and brings the benefit directly to the telecommunications user. So that's why we support it. The main reason I wanted to come up was that I know you're trying to look for how the money is being spent today and why do we need to go to 5. I don't think it helps you that much to get an examination of the 3%, because it was designed to be spent a certain way and it's been spent that way. And so for you to try and change that now would be a significant impact on local government to try and pull money out of areas like dispatchers and so forth that they can spend that money on now. So my main effort was to try and come up, give you a little more comfort with why we've gone to 5%, and also that we feel there's accountability and that they won't spend all the money unless they have approval to do it and that the approvals will be reasonable.
Well, I don't understand why we can't put some accountability and control in the existing system. Well, after I see the sheet, I will talk to you more.
Okay. Any other questions?
It's not in crayon, though. No, I'm just kidding. If you put it in a computer or something or another, spit it back out again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'm Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. We support House Bill 3564 and participated in developing some proposed amendments, which I believe you now have before you in the form of the dash A4 amendments. In reading the amendments earlier today, and I had read them before, I noticed something that I felt was lacking in terms of the agreements that had been reached among utilities, local governments, and the Trial Lawyers Association in trying to deal with this question of liability. And you should have before you something at the very top, the dash 4, but also says AOC with today's date. This is a reflection of my understanding of what we had agreed to do. And I've sent a copy of this out to the various participants in that dialogue, and hopefully they'll come back and say, yeah, that's fine. But I just wanted
who are the participants other than AOC?
It was U.S. West, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association.
Okay, I talked to Mr. Williamson briefly before the meeting, and he said they endorsed this. U.S. West, have you had a chance?
I did talk with Gary Wilhelms about it about an hour and a half ago.
Karen's shaking her head yes back there.
My understanding is Gary is
okay. And what this is the liability question for the operators and the systems.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Let me do something real quick, and we'll see if we can get some agreement. I don't know where the bill's going, but let's go to a brief work session. What I'd like to do is adopt the AOC hand-engrossed amendment to the bill and at least get that far if I can get agreement to do that. Is there someone else who wants to testify? Okay. Why don't you come on up front? Senator, do you have any objections to the...
So they have no liability if something happens with these phone calls?
Sign that list.
Paul, why don't you just briefly, the question was whether or not there's any liability. I think liability remains as long as... and it's not willful and wanton conduct. I think if they did something intentional or grossly negligent or reckless, they would be liability. Go ahead, Paul.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Paul Snyder representing Association of Oregon Counties. I think, Mr. Chair, the way you described it is accurate. As to, in particular, the concern of the Trial Lawyers Association was for operator negligence. And the effect of these amendments is to say that this change in the law won't change liability of operator negligence, whatever that is. We agreed that we don't want to increase it and they don't want to decrease it. We just want to leave that issue alone. So as to operator negligence, it's whatever it is now. As to everybody else, it's willful or wanton conduct would be the level of the test.
It's rare you get the trial lawyers and the business entities and the counties all together on any issue. So, any objection to adopting the amendment? Okay, there's no objection, so we'll adopt an amendment to the bill. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
My name is Jim Long.
Mr. Long.
My name is Jim Long. I live in rural Washington County. And I'm a sociologist. I'm also a communications consultant, and I want to talk a little bit of cause effect that perhaps you folks haven't considered yet. I'm also representing the Citizens Utility Board in a PUC proceeding investigating automatic number identification and color identification. So I'm very familiar with the issues, and I did participate in committees looking at the bill in front of you, 3564, particularly pertaining to access to emergency numbers. As you know, a number of 911 operations are getting an overload of calls, and I believe that if citizens have good access to telephone numbers, they can choose for themselves where they want to go. The particular case I want to cite here that has occurred to me is those persons who have some mental problems or one thing or another and are considering committing suicide. I know the average over the past 2 or 3 years in Oregon has been about 475 suicides per year. Now, this doesn't include the number of people who have considered it or have called suicide hotlines or crisis counseling centers. I've talked with the people at the Metro Crisis Center in Portland, like Metro Crisis Intervention there, and they say that over a third of their calls, maybe perhaps more like 40% or more of their calls, are from people who want to remain anonymous, who want their, you know, they want their confidentiality maintained. And I'm a little concerned about the calls that come into 911 and how they might get transferred to crisis intervention. But the way I see to really have some impact on that is to let people be able to call into the suicide and crisis numbers themselves, as well as other emergency services numbers. So I wanted to bring to your attention that because of an enhanced 911 system, you may have people who are hesitant and reluctant. And I'm talking not just about a dozen or so, but I'm talking, you know, more on the order of 1,000 or more people through the course of a year statewide, that if the only number they know to call is 911, if they don't have easy access to some other suicide numbers that they call directly and or other emergency numbers, that this can cause a problem. I'm not against the bill. I think it could be written better and should you know, address this concern. One thing I was suggesting, one thing I've been very involved with, is telephone directory improvements. The part of this bill which affects us is the top of page 3, the top paragraph. Top of page 3, top paragraph, where we were able to put in
section 3, subsection 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the bill may look different than what it used to. It may not be in exactly the same spot. And what I've been citing for years, I consulted for the federal government a number of times, and what I've been citing, and it's happened in the Washington County phone book. The Washington County phone book is one of those phone books that's in violation of the current law because it lists more than 911 on the inside front cover. The first page here at the top is an emergency services box. This is a very good idea. General Telephone's doing it, and this is a very good idea. This is a natural extension from the inside front cover of the phone book. The first page of listings that they would see is this emergency box, which has fire, police, hospital emergency rooms, the poison information center, power outage, abuse and assault for domestic violence, rape, child abuse, disaster services, hotlines, and suicide prevention. I bring this to your attention because it is a natural progression. So if you're going to have people calling 911 for most of their emergencies and need quick dispatch, we also need to be providing them with the ability to easily be able to access other emergency numbers so they can go there on their own, particularly if their confidentiality is concerned. Now, like I say, the PUC is considering the issue of caller ID and automatic number identification. It's premature to say how they will view that, but there are some definite concerns just in calling 911,
okay,
which I haven't
yet
heard.
Can I ask you to do something?
Sure.
Because my time is running out. Can you get to the point? What's your point with the bill? What do you want to see in the bill?
I would like to see all the phone books move to this kind of format.
This has
so those
nothing
emergency
to do
numbers
with the
are
phone
going
book.
There. On the other hand, I wanted to bring to your attention the fact that by implementing this enhanced 911 system, there will be people who, in instances, will be reluctant to call because they would be giving away and identifying their location, and they don't necessarily want to give up that anonymity. Those people in counseling, who need counseling, who need some assistance over the phone.
But you're not suggesting an amendment to the bill.
a further amendment would be helpful to get this emergency box in here. I think it's a simple matter.
I don't want to deal with how they format the phone book, to be honest with you, unless it's already in the bill.
Well, I thought it was.
Mr. Chairman, it appears, I'm not sure what the issue is, but in Section 3, Subsection 3, it says, it identifies that the 911 will be on the top of the page, and that the bottom of the page may be used to list, and it lists specifically the Poison Center, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and a designated mental health crisis service, the Coast Guard, where applicable. And then it goes into the details on how it will be decided what the mental health service will be that's listed.
Okay, Jim, was that your amendment in the substantive committee?
The portion about mental health crisis was one of them. Okay. The other important part would be the cross-reference to the human service guide. But then in that human service guide, it's a very simple, this is the information age. Information management is simple. They can just put those numbers together in a very simple fashion. That's what I'm asking for, and I think that's what will make most sense to citizens.
Hey, is the bill insufficient in its existing language? I guess that's what is there a better way to say what it is you're trying to tell us?
Sure, that where it says referral to an emergency services box at the beginning of the community services numbers section.
This is rural to community services section will be made.
Right, you see some phone books don't have the community services sections, other phone books have this emergency box, a GTE Northwest book, but all of the U.S. West books don't have that quick referral to your other emergency numbers.
Mr. Chair?
It's in the bill.
David?
For consideration of the committee, this particular section was the subject of almost 18 months worth of work on the part of a committee, which included Mr. Long. The language that you see before you represents a consensus of the group. Obviously, by Jim's testimony, not complete agreement, but nonetheless did represent the consensus of the group as it relates to this particular issue. It's one that got substantial study, substantial discussion. It was one that went from the extreme of leaving the statute the way it is presently. The present law says that no emergency number other than 911 shall be included on the emergency listing page of a directory. This was established specifically to limit the amount of space allocated for non-911 related listings, because there are a large number of special interest groups which would like to vie for a place in the directory.
Okay, I just have one little last comment.
Mr. Chair, yes, I participated, and I'm not talking about putting more numbers on the inside front cover of the book. What we want is this progression to the first page of listings and the blue pages or community services section where people can find other emergency numbers.
Mr. Chairman,
my other point would be that this group, it was a limited group. You know, mostly it was telephone company people there and 911 and Oregon Poison Control. So it was a limited group.
You were present, though, right?
I was present, yes.
Thank you.
Oh, I was just going to, as a point, of sort of fine lining it, that if this was a topic of considerable discussion of the substantive committee and is more, and to change that would be more than a sort of a technical adjustment to the bill and a non-fiscal subject, then you probably would need to refer it back to the substantive committee if you were considering it.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to close the hearing. 3564, and we'll get to the additional follow-up information we need, and hopefully a sufficient number of votes from the committee to move the bill.
I'm not ready to move the bill until I see the.
That's what I just said.
Okay.
You're gonna help us. We're gonna meet with him.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, we're gonna have it back up tomorrow.
Tomorrow's agenda. I'm gonna be moving it now.
Now don't go anywhere, Bob. I'm going to open the public hearing on 3302 quickly and get the players up here with respect to that. Hopefully this one's much simpler. Steve Bennett, if you'll come up. Can you stick around for a couple more minutes?
Okay, I do have redistricting at 3, but I can stay.
Okay, hopefully this won't take too long. This is much simpler. Oh.
Chairman Minnis, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Steve Bennett, the Director of the Board on Police Standards and Training, testifying on House Bill 3302. In the interest of time, I think a good foundation for the background on this portion of this issue with regard to 911 standards and training has already been laid by Representative Cease, and I will not recover that ground unless there is a desire on the part of one of the committee members to know something specifically. I would just like to go on record as stating that the full board has met on this issue and is supportive of the need for standards and training for the 911 telecommunicators. And the board, in reviewing the full issue of administering the standards and training for this group, feels that
for inclusion in the bill. The intent here would be to have an imprint of the State of Oregon seal on one side. We would like to seek the professional advice of the MINT companies themselves on what would provide a truly marketable type of a coin. On the other side, it could be the imprint of a park. It could be the imprint of an animal. We would seek the professional advice from the folks that literally in the field and understand the marketplace. And I have those two amendments here for you.
Okay. Senator, you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, what are you selling these coins for?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Yee, the example that we suggested was $500 per coin. And then we did our calculation based on the issue of that and came up with our projected profit.
$500 for one?
Yes, a gold coin.
This is gold and silver.
That is silver, Senator Yee.
Oh, that's silver?
Yes.
How much are the silver ones?
I don't know exactly what that would be. That would be it would be substantially less than the $500, of course, because it wouldn't have the gold content.
Do you have a gold one to show us?
No, I'm sorry, I did not, Senator Yee.
We're not trustworthy enough to run a gold
one. But I am. Just make sure you're watching where they're going.
Make sure you count how many there.
The two amendments that I'm suggesting, Mr. Chairman and members, would both flow into the bill on the first page, line 7 in section 2. We would insert the words after the word tender there on line 7, and may include the use of the state seal of Oregon with the appropriate ORS site. And that would then be followed by the sentence, if the state treasurer decides to issue commemorative coins using the state seal, no private entity shall be authorized to use the state seal on any commemorative coins. This really is coming at the suggestion of some of these MINT experts that we were talking to and would disallow the use of the state seal on other commemorative coins other than those issued by the state, and for preserving, if you will, the value of those issued by the state and the marketability.
Okay.
That's the extent of my opening comments.
All right.
Be happy to respond to any questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, so the anticipated revenue is not very much.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, it's a conservative amount that we're suggesting would flow in, yes. During the biennium, about $187,000. However, I think that what we're attempting to do here is to look at some of the needs of the potentially of the state of Oregon, to look at parkland acquisition and maintenance is something that in which we all take pride, and to look at special projects that might be generated with monies that are not general fund or other state funds. These would be profits, if you will, coming out of the private marketplace that would be directed by a commission within the parks agency itself to highlight our state even more, perhaps, and to offset some of the potential cuts or changes, perhaps, that have been caused by changes in our fiscal condition. So it's a way to to bring private money, essentially at no cost to the state, into our park system.
Okay. Mike, would you explain to us, I mean, the bill requires a $50,000 appropriation, and it's to be paid back over a number of years at a specific interest rate. Would you just briefly go over that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. Obviously, there are some startup costs involved in a program like this. We're suggesting that we receive a $50,000 loan from the general fund to be repaid to the general fund within the 2-year period at 10% interest. We don't anticipate any difficulty in matching that and returning that. As you all well know, this is not a precedent request that's being made of a loan that would be repaid. Just last session is one example. We asked for a $10,000 loan, I believe, into a new startup commission, the Housing, Education and Cultural Facilities Authority, and within a matter of days, that amount would be paid back to the general fund as well. So this is not a precedent, but it is a loan.
Okay. Let's go into a work session and see if we have any.
I'll move the amendments.
Okay, Senator Quabush moves the dash one and dash two amendments to Senate Bill 781. Any objections? Okay, consider those adopted.
I have a third proposed amendment. Would you like to hear that
sure.
at this time?
Sure, absolutely. Whose is it?
Well, it's Legislative Fiscal Office.
Ah.
Amendment. It's a technical amendment just for clarification, and that would be on line 26, following the sum of $50,000, add the words "to be credited to the commemorative coin account." This just clarifies that the general fund appropriation is to go into that account to be available for, to be drawn on for expenses.
Okay. Okay, Senator Quabush moves that amendment. Any objections? We'll consider that adopted then. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, under discussion, I just want to know if other states have this program, and is there a more aggressive marketing program they can do to bring in more money?
Mike, is there a more aggressive marketing program that you can utilize to bring in more
Chairman, Senator Yee, what we would do is we'd go to the expert of the marketplace. And essentially, there'd be a contract let with those professionals that do this for a living.
Oh.
They have the expertise. They have the access to the purchasers. They know who they are. They do this very, very aggressively on a national scale. We would attempt to go with the best, the brightest, and the most aggressive, while at the same time making sure that the loan that we've requested that you make is in fact repaid with interest, and that the parks folks are in a position to have some additional funds at their disposal. It would be an aggressive program.
Okay. Anybody want to move the main motion? Okay. Senator Yee moves that we move Senate Bill 781 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Okay, hearing none, then we'll consider that on to the full committee. House open a work session on House Bill 3564. And
quite a bit to see.
Start off. Peggy?
Mr. Chairman, I've passed out two things. The flow chart that the subcommittee requested yesterday showing the current situation with the 3% telephone tax for 9/11. And then on the second page, the way the thing would work in House Bill 3564. And then I'll go over this with you very brief, as extensively really as you want, but then I want to point out a problem that that I had with this and a discrepancy that I see between this chart and the bill, and it turns out that this is a discrepancy between the understanding of the people supporting the bill and the way it's actually written, and make a proposal to bring those two together. The first page here shows the current revenue in what's called in the bill the emergency communications account, which is the existing account that gets the 3% revenue. If you look to the left side, your left side of the page, you see that 5% of that 3% tax goes into administrative costs. And of that 5%, 1% goes to the Department of Revenue, and 4% goes to emergency management. Now, you'll notice that it's 4%, and we're talking about, in the new bill, about giving emergency management 4% rather than 3%. And the thing is that emergency management is operating under a temporary bill that sunsets at the end of this biennium. So they're already, this biennium, getting 4% for administrative costs. But at the end of this biennium, that would revert back to 3. So you'll see when you get to the next page that their percentage doesn't change, except that it would change in the next biennium because it would revert. And then of the...
Why would it revert back to 3%?
Because the bill that was written was sunsets at the end of this current biennium, because there was going to be an interim study on the 9/11 program and proposals made, and so it was just a temporary increase for them pending this legislation.
Oh, I
see. And then 95% of that 3% tax goes then to the cities and counties in the format of a distribution to them, and as was testified yesterday, for them to use at their discretion on the 9/11 programs as they exist now. Then the second page shows the distribution from the emergency communications account with a 5% tax. And you can compare the amounts of money that are dealt with here. I will tell you that legislative revenue has done a very brief revenue analysis of this that shows more revenue going in, but legislative revenue, when I questioned them, indicated that they had based their analysis on no rate decrease and a continuing number of telephones used. And as you heard testified yesterday, PUC, this is a more conservative revenue estimate based on PUC's knowledge that the rates are more likely to go down. In any event, you can see that when we're looking at the full emergency communications account, it would now have a 5% tax going into it. And then again, you can see on the left side of the page that 4.5% would go into administrative costs as compared to the 5% that's in the current situation. Of that 4.5%, 0.5% would go to revenue and 4% would go to emergency management, which makes permanent the current biennium revenue source for emergency management. The difference comes in the middle and on the right-hand side of the page, or the significance difference coming out on this chart from the main account are the two accounts that are created by this bill, the 9/11 emergency 9/11 subaccount, which is the 35% that goes to the enhancement of the systems to implement the enhanced 9/11 program, and then the 2.5%, which is the contingency fund. And as you'll recall the testimony yesterday about the need for the contingency fund during times when revenues dip seasonally and otherwise. Then the rest of the money would be distributed to
the cities and counties, and that becomes then 58% of the tax revenue. That goes up just slightly from the current biennium, but more, although the percentage goes down. That portion would be distributed again as the 3% currently is now. In other words, it would go to the counties and they would use it for their operations. The 35% would not be distributed that in the same manner to the counties. The 35% would be an expenditure of the emergency management division, and the counties would get the benefit of that money on a reimbursement basis, and they would have to file claims and reports that would be audited in terms of expenditures and to assure that emergency management concurs with the expenses. And so if you look at the revised fiscal impact statement that I've passed out, you can see that those expenditures are reflected. But we have a one biennium expenditure estimate for emergency management of $225,000 for the administrative portion of this bill. And I didn't ask them to go ahead and project that for 1993-95. It couldn't be more than around $400,000, but they really don't have any experience to project that. But it would have to be within the 4%. The enhanced 9/11 subaccount distribution that I have on this sheet is based on the bill as it is written now. And that leads me into where I read the bill differently than the charts and have interpreted it. And I've checked with legislative council and they concur that I'm reading the bill correctly. They have no opinion in terms of what the intent of the distribution ought to be, only that the way it's written is the way I'm reading it. If you look on the chart, the flow chart page, you can see that on the 9/11 account and the contingency fund account, it says 35% of 5%. So what they're assuming is that it's 35% of the total amount of money quarterly in the account. However, if you look at section 18 of the bill on page 8, toward the bottom half of page 8, in subsection 2, it says, let me see what line here, line 37, it says, after the amount specified in section 18, 1 and 2, chapter 533, Oregon Laws 1981, have been paid 35% of the amount in the Emergency Communications Fund and so on. The section 1 and 2 are the sections that deal with the administrative costs of a revenue department and the emergency management department. And so that would not be 35% of the total 5%. Accordingly, down and with the same situation exists in section 3 where it talks about the contingency subaccount. If you look on page 9, it's on the last page 44 of the page 8 and then carries over onto page 9, it says after amounts specified in section 18, 1, 2, and 3, 2.5% of the amount that's available would go into the contingency account. Subsections 1, 2, and 3 include the administrative costs of both the Department of Revenue and the Emergency Management Division and all of the distributions for the 9/11 enhancement. And so the only thing that the 2% would be accumulating on is the, according to the way the bill is written now, is what's left after all of those things. And according to the department and to the telephone company and the PUC, that is not what was intended, and that does not generate sufficient revenue to fund the bill. For instance, in the emergency sub-account, it would leave it about $600,000 short. In the contingency fund, it would leave it about $150,000 short. And the other effect that that would have would be that it would push any remaining monies over into those monies that would be simply distributed to the counties and not subject to the review over those expenditures that this bill has tried to gain, at least on the enhancement part of this program. One way that I could suggest, if the committee concurs in having that be 35% of the total fund and 2.5% of the total fund, is that the bill be amended simply to take out those sentences, those qualifying sentences at the beginning, and for instance on line 37 you would delete after the amount specified in section 18, 1 and 2 chapter and so on, and simply say, start that sentence with 35% of the amount in the contingency fund on the date of distribution would go into the, on page 8.
Page 8, line.
Line 37. You would be starting with after the amount specified and then going over and ending with have been paid, comma, you would simply delete that and start the sentence with 35% of the amount in the contingency fund on the date of the distribution shall be credited to the enhancement 9/11 subaccounts. And then on the page, on line 44 of that page, you would delete after the amounts up through line 1 of the next page, and then start the sentence with 2.5% of the amount in the emergency communications account shall be credited to the contingency 9/11 subaccount. What this would do then would keep that money in those accounts that are restricted and managed and under the control really of the state agency, keep the amount of money that flows to the districts at approximately what it is, with about $100,000 increase, and then the provisions of the bill later on allow that anything left over, which is that 58% on their chart, does go to the counties in the current distribution manner, and that again would be that $8,642,000. So,
so what do you want to delete after the amount has been paid?
If you, it's the agencies and the PUCs and the contention that if you don't have the percentages that are applying to the sub account and to the contingency fund account as percentages of the whole account, then there would be insufficient revenue going to the, into these accounts to fund the enhancement programs, that, and that the difference in those would flow through to the counties unrestricted.
So if you don't have money to pay for them, then who's going to pay for them?
Well,
sorry, I didn't understand your
See,
question.
My question is, why do you want, why do we want to delete after the money specified in sub 1 and 2 have been paid?
Now, the money in sub 1 and 2, all it is saying that by having that section in the bill, the amount of money that goes toward the enhancement of the 9/11 packages is based on a smaller amount of money, because you will have eliminated the administrative costs from the pool of money. In other words, you've got the, you've got all of the tax going into the communications account, and the 0.5% that are the administrative costs of the revenue division comes off of the top of that, and the 4% that are the costs of the emergency management division come off the top of that, and then you have less money available. The way the bill reads right now, the 35% that would be for the enhancement of the program or the enhanced system would come out of that smaller amount of money. And the way they have based all of their projections and their costs and agreements with the jurisdictions was having that amount of money that is used for enhancement of the program be 35% of the total fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're saying is that they want the, just as the administrative costs come off as a percentage of the total fund, they would like to have the program and the contingency fund also be a percentage of the total fund, and then what's left over be the leftover that's treated as the current 3% is now.
Oh.
Otherwise, the program, the administrative costs stay, are sort of held harmless, but the program cost for the enhancement would be reduced.
Oh, so you're holding that harmless also.
Yes. In other words, it would be like it is on the chart here. Mm-hmm. It would be 35% of the total 5% tax. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would be 35% of something less than the total, because you would have already taken out your administrative costs mm-hmm. before computing that 35%.
Oh.
Okay, let me ask the other players in this thing, Mr. Yandell, U.S. West, anybody else who cares. Was this just a drafting oversight?
Mr. Chair, David Yandell with Emergency Management. In answer to your question, I believe in part it was an interpretive problem or difference of interpretation between our agency and the committee that we had assembled to work on the bill and Legislative Council. I'll accept responsibility for the fact that we have the problem at this particular date, but when we sequenced the payment from the account, from the beginning, it's been intended that we be using the total quarterly proceeds as the basis for applying the various percentages. And as Peggy has indicated, she's correct, the entire financial assumptions are based on applying the percentages to the total quarterly proceeds.
So the bill's written wrong. When the bill was written or drafted, different than what the intention of the committee was. Is that right?
As we explained to Legislative Council what we needed to have take place, the paragraphs were structured to facilitate paying them out as individual applications against the quarterly proceeds.
Did you draw them one of these nifty little graphs with crayon?
We had a different one that we used to sequence the payout.
You did?
Yes.
Different than this one?
I can show you the one that we have. The one that we have.
What I'm trying to figure out is somebody's trying to pull a funny here.
No.
Because I don't like these kind of funnies. Is the way this has been drafted and handed to the committee the way it's now intended to work?
That is correct.
That's sufficient. And all of the other players agree.
That is correct. That is our concern at this point. Peggy, in doing her review, interpreted what she read in the bill differently than the way all of us have agreed to.
Okay.
What we agreed to is what we thought the bill in its written form represents. She raised a question.
Okay. Let's simplify it. This is what you want.
That is correct.
Okay, so the bill needs to be amended.
That's correct.
That's what the bill says.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, no wonder they couldn't figure it out. Look at this thing.
All those funds, Mr. Chairman. It's complicated.
We gotta start doing this ways and means stuff in crayons with big pencils and big pens. Go back to basics, simple little questions with simple little answers. Okay, do we have a list of recommended amendments to the bill to make it consistent with the diagram?
I don't have a list. The recommended amendment would be simply those that I outlined before, to take those, that introductory clause out of those two.
Okay, so the first amendment would be on page 8, line 37 and 38. After the first period, delete the entire line up until, or it begins with 35%.
Yes.
And that would then become the beginning of the new sentence. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
So you would delete that portion of the line, and the sentence would begin and say 35% of the amount in the emergency communications account on the date of distribution shall be credited to the enhanced 911 subaccount. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody want to make the motion on that amendment?
I move.
Okay. Senator Yee moves that we amend the bill as stated. Any objections? Hearing none, we'll make that amendment. Now, there's a subsequent amendment that needs to be made.
That's on line 44 of the same page, again, starting with the word after.
Okay.
And then going through the word paid, comma, on the next line, one at the next page, that would be deleted, and then the next sentence would start 2.5% of the amount in emergency communications.
Okay. Senator Yee makes...
I move the amendment.
The motion to move that amendment as stated by LFO. Any objections? Hearing none, we'll consider that adopted. Okay. So that gets us to where we want to be. Any additional comments?
Unless the committee has any questions.
Okay. Any additional questions? Comments?
Mr. Chairman, these two handwritten charts are the same as these two charts. The amount are slightly different, but I figure you ran them on.
Okay. Discussion. Now, can we get a motion on the main bill as amended? Okay, Senator Fogbush moves House Bill 3564 as amended to the full committee for the due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I want to say I'm a lot more comfortable with the bill today than yesterday. The explanation was good, and the 20 phone calls I got makes a lot of difference, so I'm comfortable in supporting.
Were they all from constituents?
Most of them. My fire chiefs and city managers and...
Okay, any objections to the bill? Mm-hmm. Representative Shiprock is a no vote.
I vote aye.
No other objections, and we'll consider the bill adopted.
Thank you.
And we're adjourned.
Did
you say we're adjourned?
Increase in tax.
Yeah, this is what else.